Today speaker is Joel Botto, who is a student of Jerzy Lewandowski in Warsaw, and he's going to tell us about QG in the diagonal gauge, a modern approach. So I let Joel take the stage. Joel? Joel?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No, yes. Okay. So first of all, I wanted to thank for the invitation today, and it's really a pleasure for me to give this talk. The topic of the talk will be basically to show you how using the gauge fixing technology, it is possible to create a framework for the full loop quantum gravity. And when I'm talking about full loop quantum gravity, I'm thinking about the canonical theory, in which we are not going to do any symmetry reduction, but we are going to keep all the physical degrees of freedom of the theory. And from this framework, we will see that it is possible to first do some computation that in the normal version of the theory are not possible. And second, we can even extract physics and make calculation that this should be the most important things. This work has been done in collaboration, let's say this program has been done in collaboration with many authors. The two people who started this framework were Emanuele and Francesco, and it was like 2012. Then many people, other people joined this project. For example, Gabriele, that he helped us a lot to understand the semi-classical dynamics in of this model. And now there are two new collaborators. One is Professor Lewandowski, and the other one is Ilka, who gave a really nice contribution, and that I'm going to talk about. So first of all, what is quantum reduced loop gravity? Quantum reduced loop gravity is a gauge fixed version of the full theory. This program was initiated by Francesco and Emanuele at the beginning, just to build a bridge to connect the cosmological sector of the full theory and loop quantum cosmology. But during the years, it turns out that this program has much more potential than we expected at the beginning. And in principle, we will see that it can be considered really a general framework in which any kind of space-time can be studied. The first consistent realization of this model program, however, was performed in a framework that was suitable to study spherically symmetric space-times. This framework has been investigated by Emanuele, Daniele, and Sina Barami. And this will not be the topic of my talk, but what I just want to mention is that they study the internal part of a black hole, and they notice that when we are including some degrees of freedom that we are not able to include in MIDI superspace model, there can be some surprise in the dynamics. So now the idea is that we are trying to reformulate the first idea of Emanuele and Francesco that it was which they create this framework to be applied in cosmology. We are reformulating this idea in a more consistent way and from a modern point of view, in such a way that it will be much more clear. For example, what is the relation between this quantum reduced loop gravity and the full theory? We will see, we will explore if this model is consistent, but the most important thing is that we want to understand the physical intuition behind this model. All these things that I'm going to present you in this talk are in a paper that is under preparation. So first of all, let's start from general relativity. General relativity is the classical theory that everybody would like to quantize. But let's start really at the classical general relativity and how we can look for solution for Einstein equation. If we start from the full general relativity, when no background system is fixed a priori, we can try to solve in this general setting the Einstein equation, but as far as I know, there are still no general solution to these equations for their complexity. They are 10 coupled nonlinear differential equation, and find a general solution is really hard. But that's what, this is where the physical intuition should help us to find some solution. And what is the one of the most natural way to find solution? Well, we have just to think about a physical system that we want to study. This physical system should present some symmetry. So what we can do is try to write the Einstein equation in a coordinate system which is adapting to this symmetry. In this way, it turns out that the Einstein equation are much more easier, and in many cases, like for the spherically symmetric space-time, for the cosmological sector, we can find an explicit solution of this reduced Einstein equation, and we can study in this way the physical system in which we are interested. But there will be another way to try to study general relativity. That is the one that is connected to the gauge fixing. What does it mean? Basically, we know that in four-dimensional general relativity, we have four diffeomorphisms that represent like the invariance of the theory. So what we can do? In principle, we can fix these diffeomorphisms to eliminate, for example, some component of the metric tensor. For example, it has been shown in 2009 that it is possible always to choose four diffeomorphisms to write a general metric in a block diagonal form. But the question is, being able to write the metric in this way, it can be really an advantage from a classical point of view. The answer is not clear, because yes, we will have less component of the metric, and in principle one should naively think that the equation will be easier, but this is not the case, because the component which will remain, they will have a much more complex form. And second, there is another thing, because to write the metric in this form, the problem is that what we have to do is to solve a system of couple of differential equation. And until now, the solution, as far as I know, nobody has found an explicit solution. So why I say that we can do this, let's say, transformation? Because at least we are able to prove that the solution of this system exists. However, the point is that even in this framework, we can, without losing any physical information of the full general relativity, because when we are doing a gauge fixing, we are just removing some redundant degrees of freedom. So in principle, we are not removing any physical information from our starting theory. And even from this gauge-fixed, let's say, general relativity, we can basically take the same street to arrive at some physical solution. The result that we are going to use in this talk is the following one that was proved by Young in 1984, which states that any three-dimensional metric can be diagonalized. And this it will be helpful because in the framework that we want to study, so the ADM formulation of general relativity, what we are doing basically is that we are studying the evolution of a first initial data surface. And in this first initial data surface, we have defined the metric and moment, and the metric is three-dimensional. So now let's start to check the idea behind this frame of quantum reduced loop gravity by starting from the old formulation from Francesco and Emanuele. What was their first idea? Let's start from the phase space of general relativity parameterized by the Hachetard variables. Okay. But we don't want to consider the full Hachetard variables. We want to consider a simplified system when this variable can be written in the diagonal form. So now the question that we should ask to ourselves is, but we can just, with a gauge fixing, reduce both the Hachetard connection and the density triads in a diagonal form? The answer is no, of course, because what is the fact that when we are moving to the Phase space written in hashtag variable, it is true that we have one more constraint, the SU2 ones. But in this way, if we want to have diagonal connection and diagonal density trials, in principle, we will have to remove a lot of components that should be like 12. And the first rule of a good gauge fixing is that for any constraint of your theory, you can impose maximum one gauge fixing condition. So how can you reduce to a framework in which a gauge fixing is not enough to give the variable the phase space written in the variable that you want? Well, the only other option is a symmetry reduction. But a symmetry reduction is a point that is subtle, because we are used to think about symmetry reduction basically when we already know which symmetry we want to impose on our system. In this way, just cutting away some degrees of freedom, it's dangerous. It's dangerous because our Hamiltonian will never preserve a phase space written in this way. It will preserve a phase space when we will be able to understand which are the symmetries compatible with this form of variable that we are going to study. Physically, this means that basically we should find the most general system possible, the smallest group of symmetry that this system is satisfying. So in this case, Emanuele and Francesco should move basically on two parts. The first one, the dynamics should be the gauge fixing should be preserved by the dynamics. And they find out that the degrees of freedom which they were able to eliminate through a gauge fixing, basically, they were preservable if we were going to neglect completely the Ricci scalar. But neglect the Ricci scalar, basically, loop quantum gravity means that we are neglecting a piece of the Hamiltonian, the Lorentzian part, because it can be written in function of this Ricci scalar. And the other point was, okay, now we understand the part of the gauge fixing, but now to have a dynamics which is preserving our phase space, we have to understand with which symmetry is compatible. Well, what they found is that this dynamics, this phase space was compatible only with homogeneous spacetime. But this was the first step of their model, because the first goal of their model was to, like I said, build a bridge from loop quantum gravity and loop quantum cosmology. And in my opinion, they partially succeed in this, because they were able to obtain the dynamic of loop quantum cosmology in a framework that was much more similar to the full theory, in the sense that in their framework, still the spin network states, so the graph structure of the theory were present, and even the discretization of the geometrical quantities, which are described, for example, by the air and the volume operator, were still present in their framework. So in this sense, it was a model that was a little more general than loop quantum cosmology. It was not still the full theory, but it was something, let's say, in the middle. But now the point is, starting from their work, it is possible to formulate their idea in a much more general way, where we are not introducing any symmetry reduction. Well, this idea, in some sense, is something that we can implement. How we can implement this idea? First of all, we have to decide which gauge fixing we want to impose and which kind of phase space we want to study. In this framework, we decided something like this, that we are imposing 6 gauge fixing constraints, okay, the Ki and Ei, that were fixed using the Gauss constraints and the spatial diffeomorphism constraint. And the first constraint is symmetrizing the trial. So let me think at just for one moment, even if it's not a rigorous way of the triad like a matrix. Basically, why we are using the Gauss constraint? We are using Gauss constraint to set free gauge fixing condition in which we will have symmetrized triads. So then what we can do? we can just use the diffeomorphism constraints to kill three of diagonal components of the triads, and in this way, we should finish with a gauge fixed space with this form. It has the connection which have all component, and it has the triads which are only diagonal. But what we know is that diagonal triads imply diagonal matrix. It's a stronger condition, of course, but still it implies diagonal matrix. So first things we have to understand of this gauge fixing. Is this gauge fixing well defined? Well, the answer is yes, because the gauge fixing to be well defined should have two characteristics. The first one is that you can, like I said earlier, you can have at most one gauge fixing condition for each constraints, if each of your starting constraints of the theory. And this is exactly what we have, because we have we are using six constraints, so we are doing a partial gauge fixing. It's not a full gauge fixing because the scalar constraint is not involved. And we impose six gauge condition. Then the second thing is my gauge fixing accessible? What does it mean if the gauge fixing is accessible? We can understand from the example by earlier about the existence of the solution in general in full in four-dimensional general relativity of let's say some coordinate system in which the metric can be written like a in a block diagonal form. What does it mean? It means that there in the case of diffeomorphism, it's maybe easier to see this. There exists three diffeomorphisms who are able to kill three component of my triads. The answer in both cases are the answer is yes. And even for the Gauss constraint, we check that it's possible to fix three gauge fixing condition who are accessible and they are symmetrizing the triads. So the gauge fixing condition are well defined. But then there is the most difficult part, because this basically is telling us that on the first slice of our phase space, we can write a phase space in this form still by keeping all the degrees of freedom of general relativity. But the point is, this gauge fixing can be preserved by the dynamics. And the second point is how to deal with gauge fixing at the quantum level, because at the classical level, there are some tools that are well known and we know more or less how to move with a gauge fixing. On the quantum level, it is more complicated. So let's try to find a
strategy. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Can you precise what gauge fixing you're taking? So the half diagonal element of E is equal to zero, and what is the first line? What is chi?
The first one, chi, basically is a condition with symmetrizing the triads. Things just 1 second in a non-rigorous way of triads like a matrix. This thing is telling you that basically you have the off diagonal component of the triad becomes symmetric. So E12 become equal to E21.
Okay, but if you impose that they are zero, isn't that redundant?
I impose first this one and I have symmetrized triads. Then I decided to kill these of diagonal components. But now, let's say, being symmetric, the triads, they are not, they don't save so anymore.
So just, you put to zero, not the component of the triad, but the component of the symmetrized triad.
Yes, exactly. In this way, I have diagonal triads. So I'm using six constraints, basically, to kill 6 degrees of freedom in this way. So 1 degree of freedom for each constraint. But still, the scalar constraint is not touched because this is a partial gauge fixing. This is important for the when we will move in the next slide. Can I continue?
Yeah. I hope it will become clearer what exactly condition you take.
Okay. Thanks. So, how to deal with a second class system? Because now that we are imposing some gauge fixing condition, our system becomes second class. The first strategy is the one of the Dirac bracket. The Dirac bracket basically are used very often in the classical setting, and it consists in a modification of the Poisson bracket. Basically, in this equation, f and g are just two general functions defined on our phase space, and phi A and phi B basically are just the second class constraints which are present in our theory. On the classical level, the only difficult part to deal with the gauge fixing using the Dirac's bracket basically is by find the inverse of this matrix MAB, that is the Dirac matrix. Once we have done this, to have basically a well-defined theory with preserving our gauge fixed space is quite easy, because we have just to replace the Poisson bracket with this Dirac bracket. But the Dirac bracket have one big problem if we want to quantize our theory, because it's completely not easy to find a quantum representation of the algebra induced by this structure. And so it's one object that we don't want to include in our quantum theory. But there is a second method to treat second class constraint, which is the gauge unfixing. What is the philosophy of the gauge unfixing? Basically, the philosophy of the gauge unfixing is the following. There is a trade with respect to the Dirac bracket. In the gauge unfixing formalism, the Poisson bracket remains the same. So where there is the modification which allow us to preserve our gauge fixed space is in the Hamiltonian, because what I'm calling H system is just an Hamiltonian of the system that you are studying. If you are successful in applying the gauge unfixing procedure, basically what you have that your Hamiltonian is changing, because it will have some extra term that basically you can find by applying this procedure, if you are able to apply this procedure, and this procedure guarantee you that this new Hamiltonian will preserve your gauge fixed space. Okay. What we have to do basically to have a successful gauge unfixing? Basically, we can show that it's the same like in the Dirac bracket. We have to invert the Dirac matrix. But here, there is even here a problem if we want to go quantum. What is the problem? The main problem of the gauge unfixing is the following one. When you are able to let's say invert the Dirac matrix, and you know that you have a new Hamiltonian who is preserving your gauge fixed space, it happens something, because the gauge unfixing procedure has this structure that when you arrive, let's say when you apply this procedure, you have a phase space that is different from the one which you were starting. Why this? Because doing the gauge unfixing, there is even a trade between first class constraints. What I mean by this, that performing the gauge unfixing, what happens is that the first class constraint of your theory, for example, in general relativity, I'm thinking just a general relativity in this moment parameterized by momenta and metric. We have three diffeomorphisms, for example. If we want to fix free gauge fixing condition with them, and then we apply the gauge unfixing, we find this Hamiltonian is preserving our phase space, but the free gauge fixing condition will become the new set of our first class constraints, and the old first class constraints will become gauge fixing, will be interpreted as gauge fixing condition of the new set of constraints. So it is clear that if we want to quantize this system, we have a system that has a different structure from the starting one, and a reduced quantization of this system is not easy at all, because, for example, if we think about loop quantum gravity, we cannot use the loop quantum gravity machinery to quantize this new system. But there is another option that is due to Gupta-Bloyer that is applied usually in electrodynamics. What is this procedure? Basically, the Gupta-Bloyer procedure is doing something like this. We have our second class constraints, our gauge fixing condition. Let's promote them to operator, and let's impose them weakly, and let's impose this condition weakly on the physical states of the theory. These two states in principle are different, are not the same states. The Gupta-Bloyer procedure, if it is applied in a correct way, it should project just the states from the starting theory to the Hilbert space of to the gauge fixed Hilbert space. So it is a way to remove somehow the degrees of freedom, which classically we remove just by imposing the gauge fixing condition. It's remove them at the level of states. But the problem, if we still think about loop quantum gravity, is the following: which are our physical states? We don't know, because as far as I know, there are no full solution of the scalar constraints. So what is the strategy in quantum reduced loop gravity? In quantum reduced loop gravity, the strategy that we adopt is an hybrid strategy between the gauge unfixing and Gutta-Bloyer lawyer. First of all, what we want to do? We want to find an Hamiltonian who we know that will preserve our gauge fixed space. Okay? So this is what we are doing classically. Let's go quantum. So quantum, then what we are doing? Remember that our gauge fixing is partial. Okay? So basically, quantum, what we are doing? Let's take thinking about loop quantum gravity, let's take the kinematical states of loop quantum gravity. And when I'm talking about kinematical states, should be the knotted spin network. So the solution, both of the Gauss constraints and the diffeomorphism constraints. Let's impose the Gupta-Bloyer condition. If we perform this procedure in a correct way, okay, so imposing to zero, the solution of this relation should be our states who are living in our gauge fixed space. But then there is the problem. Okay, now you are able to find this gauge fixed state, but this Hilbert space should be preserved by the Hamiltonian. Yes, but as I said, the Hamiltonian who should preserve this gauge fixed Hilbert space is what we have found through the gauge unfixing procedure. So we will take this classical Hamiltonian and we have to quantize it. In this way, we have a setting that should guarantee us that this Hilbert space, so the form, as we will see in this Hilbert space, our states will have a specific form. If we are able to find this Hamiltonian, the form of the state should be preserved during the dynamics. To make a classical analogy, this should be a way to preserve the coordinate system that we are introducing with our gauge fixing. Why this procedure should be valid? Because we are performing a partial gauge fixing. If we wanted to perform a full gauge fixing using Gutta-Bloyer, we will have no chance because, as I said, we completely don't know the physical states. So it would be completely impossible.
I have a question, on that slide.
Yeah, sure.
In fact, it's kind of two questions. The first one is that I'm surprised that you don't mention what I think is the simplest and the most natural way to deal with second class constraints, which is just to construct the full, the sets of Dirac observables. That is the one that commute with the constraints, and then you quantize these ones. And these ones, then you find the Hilbert space as a representation space of these observables.
Yeah, I agree. But this is still not a way that we have investigated. It was a project we started talk with Professor Lewandowski about this option and this, in my opinion, a really natural option, but still I cannot tell you if with this procedure we will be able to obtain the same result, because still we didn't explore this option, but of course it's something that we should do.
Okay, so that's the most natural. Okay, yeah. I also agree this is really the most natural in most cases. The second point is, I think it's an important point of confusion. What you call Gupta-Bloyer, and I know you're not responsible for this, because a lot of authors call this, what you just saw, this weak imposition of the constraints, Gupta-Bloyer.
Yeah.
But what you describe is not Gupta-Bloyer. The thing you describe, in fact, does not define the Hilbert space, because it's a condition which is quadratic on the states. And if you want to define a Hilbert space, you need to have a linear condition on the states. So Gupta-Bloyer is not that, and I don't know why people started to call that procedure Gupta-Bloyer. Gupta-Bloyer is that you take a set of second-class constraints, you find a complex structure compatible with the Poisson structure, and then you use that to construct a complex constraint, which is now first class. That's Gupta Euler, and this defines a Hilbert space because you don't impose you impose that C acting on psi, the complex constraint, is equal to zero, and of course C dagger, you know, of course satisfy the second one, but that has nothing. And I think it's a huge confusion in the LQG literature that, I don't know, for some reason people haven't understood what Gupta Euler is about.
Ah, okay.
So you might want to investigate that because this is also the simplest way to define, right?
So thank you very much for the remark.
If you're following, please don't call this procedure Gupta Euler.
No problem. I just was following the literature.
You see that constraint is
which I invented. Yeah. But thank you very much for the remark. For sure, I will.
And that will be the source of many of your problems, right?
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So let's start from the classical step. As I told you, to perform the gauge unfixing, we have basically to invert the Dirac matrix. So we have to study the Dirac matrix associated to our program. The Dirac matrix turned out to be this one. If you act with this differential operator and you write it the associated differential problem, basically what you can do is to reduce this problem to a free purely differential equation. These free differential equation, luckily we were able to classify them like a generalized symmetric hyperbolic system. What does it mean? Is that now for the goal of this talk, this is something that is not really so important, but for what we need, it means that the solution exists, is unique, and depends continuously on the initial data. So this is really something good because it means that our gauge fixing is not only well-defined, but is even preservable by the dynamics. And about this, we are happy. Because it means that we can continue with this construction, because if there was no chance that our gauge fixing was preserved by the dynamics, basically everything will be meaningless. And an explicit solution of this equation has not yet been found, but for now that we will talk mostly about kinematics and some simplified context of dynamics, knowing that a solution exists is unique and depends uniquely on the initial data is something which is sufficient for the moment. So now we have to continue with these two conditions that I will not call Gupta Euler anymore. So to impose this condition weakly of our states to find some solution and see how they will look our states to our solution of this condition. So we promote chi I to operator, and these constraints, which I call AKA, basically are the second class constraint connected to the diffeomorphism. In this case, we are in a setting where the diagonal matrix, where the matrix are diagonal. So to have somehow a physical intuition to how to solve this system, we can record that diagonal matrix can be written in an orthogonal coordinate system. So we can fix an orthogonal coordinate system and build graph adapted to this orthogonal system. What are these graphs? Basically, these graphs are cuboidal spin network where every edge is labeled by a different J, okay? This solution, what I have to clarify is that it has been found in the large J limit. Okay, so this is the point that we should on which we should concentrate, because the quantum reduced loop gravity has not the potential to be the full theory in all gravity regime, but it has the potential to be the full theory in a large J limit. Then later I will try to quantify, because try to quantify how big should be this J, it's something that I think is important. Okay? These states, however, are not so trivial one like one could think at the first time I saw it, because this state can represent, in the most general case, a non-homogeneous geometry, okay? But why they are even nice, these states? Because we have a physical intuition to build even some more simple geometry, so to give notion of symmetry that in the full loop quantum gravity it's not so easy, to our kinematical states. Indeed, how can I have an intuition of anisotropy? An intuition of anisotropy can be given to these states by, let's say, give the same J on a fixed direction, and this procedure for all the direction. And the other point is that we can even build homogeneous states just by giving labeling with the same J, basically with the same, so the same representation, all the edge of this graph. One important point is that on this limit, the intertwiner basically are not present in our model because they are just a complex number that we cannot, that usually in quantum mechanics, when you have some complex number, usually they don't carry any important physical information. And another thing which I want to stress is that you don't have to intend these states, so this cubical spin network that you should imagine like a collection of cubes. Here, I just put one cube just to give you the idea. Cubical in a strict sense, because only the intersection at nodes should be cubical. So they can be even something like deformed cubes or something like this. But then there is a point that is an ongoing discussion with Professor Lewandowski, and it regards the gauge invariance, because clearly the new states that which we have found are not gauge invariant. And at first point, one should say, okay, but even in the classical theory, when you are to define, when you are defining some gauge fixing, then it's normal that if you act again with, I don't know, a constraint, for example, I fix some diffeomorphism, so I put my metric in a given coordinate system, if I'm acting again with a general diffeomorphism, this coordinate system will not be preserved. So in this sense, you cannot act again on a fixed coordinate system with some general transformation and expect that you will be still in the same coordinate system. But we have to try to translate, at least for the discussion with Professor, to translate this argument at the quantum level. So which are the arguments that we would like to use now to say no? First of all is the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics. In the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics, what are states? States are just like some books who are containing physical information about the system that we want to study. But not by not physical, I mean that are not measurable things that are living in our universe. How we can explicitly calculate some physical quantities by operator. Operator are giving us the description of the physical information which are included in the states. So one first naive guessing is that, okay, I can have, since they are not physical, I can have some gauge, non-gauge invariant states, but I would like that the observable, that the operators acting on these states should be gauge invariant. The second point is the following. Let us think at the knotted spin network states. One second. We know that these knotted spin network states are invariant with respect to spatial diffeomorphisms. So what this means? That these knotted spin network don't need a coordinate system to be defined. Indeed, we can even define knotted spin network when they are not embedded basically in nothing. But the question is, to be still in full general relativity, it is a mandatory request that these invariants should be respected with from all possible coordinate system or backgrounds? And the answer should be no, because like we know, general relativity is a gauge theory. And in a gauge theory, we can define some gauge fixing condition, which if they are accessible and preservable, they tell us somehow that many of these backgrounds are just redundant. So if we are able to select a subclass of this coordinate system, so of this background, through a gauge fixing, we know that this background will still contain all the possible degrees of freedom, physical degrees of freedom of the theory. What we have done in our framework? In our framework, By proving that this gauge fixing is accessible and preservable, we show that for the matrix, this background are the orthogonal ones. So what we were doing is to try to find state which were adapting to this background. That it means somehow to try to write the state in this coordinate system. But we know that GR, we can formulate GR in a such a coordinate system without losing any physical information. So since the states are not measurable objects, but they contain measurable information, if we are able to find a class of coordinate system where all the relevant degrees of freedom are preserved, if in theory, if we are able to write state about to this system, this state should contain still all the physical information of the starting theory, in this case, full general relativity. But now let's say that we define our states, okay? Now we have to understand the part of operators that is really, really important. So many years ago, the approach of Emanuele and Francesco was the following. Okay, we have our full theory Hilbert space. We are imposing the gauge fixing condition and we end up with a space which all the states are collection of cubes. And like I said earlier, you don't have to intend really cubes in a strict sense, are just some even deformed cubes. Only the intersectional nodes should be cubical. What Emanuele and Francesco did, basically they took the full theory operator and they project this operator on the space of state, okay? What they noticed were some really nice properties. For example, these new operators which they define, which they call the reduced operator, if we are writing the reduced volume and we are acting on a general state, okay, so in a state like this, the volume is diagonal and is proportional to this expression. So this is very nice because the volume is one of the, let's say, hardest point to deal if we want to be still in the full theory. But what is the problem? But by doing this projection, first, the relation with the full theory operators is not clear. And second, the fact that when we have not an elementary operator like the volume is, let's say, function of a combination of our elementary operator. And what they were doing, Emanuele and Francesco, was not projecting the whole volume, but was a projection component by component. So, yes, they had some reduced operator, but it was really not clear the relation of them with the one of the full theory. But Ilka, just a few weeks ago, was able to publish a paper in which basically solves this problem. Because what was the approach of Ilka? Okay, we have these two, the full theory Hilbert space, and we have our new space of states, which are cubical. Let's not project nothing on this space. Let's take the full operator, so the operator of the full theory, for example, the Hashteker-Lewandowski volume, and let's evaluate the action of the Hashteker-Lewandowski volume of this kind of state. What he found, Ilka? Ilka found that in the large A limit, the full theory operators reproduce exactly the results of the reduced operators. But still here is important, this large A limit, that at the end I will try to quantify because it gives some, in my opinion, interesting indication really of what quantum reduced loop gravity can really compute and the relation really of loop quantum gravity, of quantum reduced loop gravity and the full theory. So why the previous problem were solved? Because in this case, they are the full theory operator and there is no need of projection. And the most important thing is that still computation are possible. So let's try to have like a general vision of the relation between full loop quantum gravity and quantum reduced loop gravity, that it somehow reminds us one of the first slides which I present you about general relativity. So if we start from loop quantum gravity, we don't have any fixed background a priori. We can define our gauge invariant state, but if we ask, for example, with the Hashteker-Lewandowski volume on this gauge invariant state, why with the volume, I will make the example of the volume because at least it's a kinematical observable and should give us a clear vision of the geometry behind a spin network. But the problem is that in general, we are not able to find a closed expression for the eigenvalue, a closed expression for the volume acting on a general state. So this, what does it mean? This means that even we don't have a geometrical intuition of what is happening. Already at the quantum level, it's hard to have a geometrical intuition on what we are doing. But here, really, we are not able even to do the computation, so we are completely blinded. But one can say, okay, I don't have maybe a geometric intuition of what is happening or what my spin network is representing, but maybe I can compute the dynamics. The answer is no, because in the dynamics still there is the volume operator, and we cannot even, at least there were many approaches that even in the Warsaw group, they try to create some dynamics that is somehow computable, but until now, there is, as far as I know, there are not some strong encouraging result to define a to find the action of the full Hamiltonian or this gauge invariant states of the theory. Now with the full Hamiltonian, I mean the scalar constraint. But what happens if we perform a gauge fixing? We are going to, with the gauge fixing, like we have seen, now we are fixing an orthogonal coordinate system. This system is general, it's not a precise system, let's say I want to do physics in Cartesian coordinate. No, this is just a generalized orthogonal system because our state should be invariant even under a class of reduced diffeomorphisms that are the one basically that classically you can see that are the one that they can reparametrize the diagonal component of the metric. So we can write these gauge invariant states, and we cannot with the volume of the most general states that we can represent. What happened? This is the Hashteker-Lewandowski volume, and it gives us what? It gives us an expression that is computable, and it gives us even a geometric intuition, because if we are looking at this formula, what is this formula? In quantum reduced loop gravity, basically J is connected to the area, okay? Here, what is this formula, basically? This formula is the volume of a sort of cube. Why a cube? Because you can see if I will take all J that are the same, basically what will be the volume of these states will be just J to the power 3/2. So basically it's the volume of a cube. So in more general, what happened in quantum reduced loop gravity is that we are doing a refinement of our first initial data surface of some cuboid. And even here, when I am talking about cuboid, I don't mean cube in a strictly sense, because in this way, when we are considering a non-homogeneous state, the geometrical figures that we are considering some kind of deformation of the cube. So what is the physical vision in quantum reduced loop gravity? That we have our first initial data surface, okay? And what we are doing is a, let's say, abstract non-homogeneous cubulation of an abstract topology. Here, when I'm talking about abstract, it means general, because here are included all, basically all possible topology who can be expressed in an orthogonal coordinate system, whose geometry can express it in an orthogonal coordinate system. And the other point is, okay, now we have our first initial data surface that we know is made of quantum of geometry that should remind us, that should be somehow in a cubical form. But then we have to know how to evolve this quanta of geometry, and we have to evaluate the dynamics. Okay, quantum reduced loop gravity, the dynamics, given this simplification of the operators, it's computable, okay? But as far until now, we don't know if it's solvable. This problem of study the quantum solution of the quantum reduced loop gravity is still something that we have not done, okay? But if we are not so ambitious to try to find the spectrum of our Hamiltonian, what we can do? These cubical states give us a perfect, arena to introduce symmetry at the level of states in the quantum level, like I told you earlier. So for example, if we want to study, Bianchi one spacetime, we can, in this case, choose the coordinates, a specific coordinate system. Then we have to think about the symmetry that we want to implement. Okay, so Bianchi one is homogeneous and anisotropic. So what we are doing? We are writing our states in a sense that should remind us an anisotropic geometry. If we are calculating the volume at nodes, this is the form, so it's just the product of J1, J2, times J3. There should be a factor 2, but I didn't put it because it's not important. The important fact is that this is basically is connected to the geometry of a discretized rectangle. Okay, so we prepare the first slice of our spacetime out with an homogeneous and anisotropic copulation of a topology that is compatible with the one of Bianchi one, because until here I still haven't talked about dynamic. Here is just everything at the kinematical level. So what I have to do to know how this geometry is evolving? In this case, I can build some coherent state, which basically are picked, okay, on the Bianchi one metric. How these states are built? Basically, in quantum reduced loop gravity, in the limit of the large J limit, these states basically are built by putting some sort of Gaussian associated to every edge, and these Gaussian are picked basically on the classical metric. So the last step, what it is? The last step is to, now we have our anisotropic copulation and homogeneous copulation of our manifold. We have the states, we can use the states to compute how this geometry is evolving. So this is a clear picture of geometry dynamics. These things, to compute the dynamics, has been done in the previous formulation of quantum reduced loop gravity, only in the semi-classical setting for Bianchi one and Friedman-Lemaitre Robertson-Walker in the case k equal to zero. But now, what is the difference? That now, basically, we don't have any restriction to study only homogeneous space-time, and indeed, we have even the Lorentzian part of the Hamiltonian. We need to find the term of the gauge unfixing to keep all the possible term which will preserve our dynamics. But in this case, with this framework, in principle, we can study any line element that we want at the level of coherent states. And there is even the possibility to try to investigate the pure quantum dynamics, let's say, by solving this equation, because here the action of the Hamiltonian on these states is really computable. Okay? So what it can be considered, this reduced model? This reduced model can be considered, in some sense, the leading order in J of the full theory. And later, as I said, I will try to specify what is this leading order, because somehow it's very important and can give us some interesting, in my opinion, information about even the relation of loop quantum cosmology and the full theory, the quantum reduced loop gravity and the full theory, and so on. But of course, this is written in a specific coordinate system, but this coordinate system is, we can access to this coordinate system through a gauge fixing. And in this sense, we are considering all the physical degrees of freedom without imposing any kind of restriction. At the moment, so what is quantum reduced loop gravity? In my opinion, in this moment, it represents an arena to study the discrete version of general relativity. Because as I will try to argue later, we still don't have really included quantum effect in our framework. But what I want to stress is that it should not be considered just a coherent state model, because the coherent state dynamics is just one possible application of this framework, since the quantum computation are possible. But what we can do with this model? First of all, the most important thing is to find these extra terms, which will allow us to basically study all the space-time that we want. Okay, and then there will be the problem to quantize it, because when we are performing the gauge unfixing procedure, what happens is that in our Hamiltonian, many non-local terms will appear. But the second thing is what it is. The second thing is to write a specific Ricci scalar for our model, because until now, as far as I know, the quantization of the Lorentzian part of the constraint can be done in two ways. Okay, first is the Tiemann's regularization, and the second is the regularization proposed in Warsaw. Well, in this case, we don't want to follow any of these two regularizations. Why? Because there should be the most natural way to introduce this Ricci scalar. What is it? Just write the Ricci scalar in terms of densitized triads, promote them to be fluxes, and act with this operator on our states. In this way, it seems like a quite natural way to define these operators. Why in the full theory this has not been done? Because the calculation on a generic graphs are really, really difficult, because this object includes even second derivatives, and to write these second derivatives on a general graph, it's really not easy. But in this case, the thing is that this operator should be regularizable on our states, because how we can express the derivative here, we can express like just finite difference of the fluxes, for example, at the beginning and at the ending of the edge. Then there is the other important point, which regards graph changing or not graph changing. All the calculation which until now has been done in quantum reduced loop gravity, they were done using a non-graph changing Hamiltonian, okay? But what we know, even from loop quantum cosmology, that a non-graph changing Hamiltonian not only is giving us, let's say, a not nice physical picture. Why? Because in the non-graph changing Hamiltonian, let's say that we are acting with our Hamiltonian on a state which contains the information of the geometry connected to Bianchi 1. In a non-graph changing Hamiltonian, this is the physical spaces, not the states. What happened? It happens that the number of fundamental cell is not growing, it's just becoming bigger and bigger. But this picture, especially in an homogeneous setting, is not easily to see it in our space-time, because this means that the concept of homogeneity will be always less valid. So what everybody, and then there is another problem, that if you are using a non-graph changing Hamiltonian, for example, in loop quantum cosmology, but even in quantum reduced loop gravity, and you want to do cosmology, you end up with the mu naught regularization. And the mu naught regularization is giving some really not nice physical effects when we are studying the dynamics of the universe. For example, with the mu naught regularization, basically what happens is that we can shift the bounds which happen in loop quantum cosmology at arbitrary energy scale. So how we solved this problem? This solvent somehow is solved by introducing the mu bar regularization scheme that basically tells you that you should use a graph changing Hamiltonian, because what is the vision in the mu bar scheme? The mu bar scheme, the vision is the following, that are not the fundamental cell that are growing, but that the dynamics is adding other fundamental cell to your spacetimes that are as big as the cell that you were standing on. In this picture, it's not clear, but it should be that every cell carry the same geometry, the same volume, the same area, and so on. This is something that we have to do in quantum reduced loop gravity. But this is...
There is a question by Francesco, I think.
Yeah. I know you're in the end, so maybe we can postpone this to the discussion, but I just wanted to raise the point that I know that this is what you find in the literature in the discussion about the mu bar scheme versus the mu naught scheme, that this is associated with the different picture with respect to the growth of the graph or not. But I disagree. I simply disagree. And I mean, if you can explain me why you think that there is a relation between the two, then it would be very helpful for me.
I don't understand the question. Why in the MUBAR scheme the graph is growing?
Yes.
In the MUBAR scheme the graph is growing because basically what you are doing is that you are writing what is your fundamental cell in terms of the number of nodes and
In loop quantum cosmology, this is not true because there are no nodes. There is no graph in loop quantum cosmology, so there is
exactly. But but the point in loop quantum cosmology is that to introduce this regularization scheme, you are importing the microscopic structure of the full theory. Otherwise, you don't have even a well-defined theory at the level of operator.
Yes, but it's just a regularization that tells you that you have to...
Once you introduce the MUBAR scheme, you are importing in your theory the microscopic structure of loop quantum gravity, because we have even derived semi-classically, not at the quantum level, the MUBAR scheme, and there you really clearly see the picture of what is a MUBAR scheme. Because the MUBAR scheme is connected to the relation between the number of nodes of your graph and the J number which labeled your graph. In the mu node scheme, what you are saying is that J, okay, is growing. J is your dynamical variable. In the mu bar scheme, what you are saying is that I want to fix J, for example, in LQC is done by, let's fix J to 1/2. Why? Because 1/2 should represent the smallest possible cell which my theory which is available in my theory. But n become now the dynamical variable. So what is changing in the mu bar vision is the number of nodes. And if you increase the number of nodes of your graph, keeping J fixed, the vision is clearly that you are adding block of space to the in the evolution. This is we derive this regularization and from exactly this state, and this is the picture that is it's not, I think, literature. This is my opinion. It's really the physical picture that we are observing, and the reason why they decide to choose the smallest eigenvalue, this was a choice that is explained in a paper by Ashtekar, is that in this way they will have the best coarse grain homogeneity. Okay, this is the reason to choose J, to fix J equal to 1/2, but this is just a choice. But the important thing is that in the MUBAR is the number of nodes which is evolving. This is the point.
I keep on disagreeing, but this is a long discussion. Go ahead.
Yeah, we can discuss, but this is, if I'm sure that if I will show you from this how we recovered the MUBAR scheme using these cuboidal states, I think that I can convince you. But of course, I would be happy to discuss more at this point, because I find it extremely important in the...
I'm aware, but this is just a matter of putting the right dimensions in your holonomies, I think. I think we can disentangle the two problems of the growing of the graph and the regularizing properly with the right dimensions. Thank you for your answer.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Okay, we'll see. Okay, so the other goals, which are the other goals? The other goals are the following, that first of all, we have to see if these coherent states, which Emanuele defined for a given space-time, they are stable under the Hamiltonian, because this is at the quantum Hamiltonian, because this has not been still done. And check if finally we will be able to find some solution, because now the action of the Hamiltonian is computable. And maybe the most ambitious goal would be the following one, to have the full Hamiltonian, even with the gauge unfixing term, and write a collection of coherent states on the most general states which we can write, picked on a general metric, let's say. From this, try to find an effective dynamics of our model that will be just the effective dynamics of the diagonal loop quantum gravity, and do the cosmological perturbation directly from the constraints. In this way, we should be able to find some modification from loop quantum gravity in the Mukhanov-Sasaki equation, because now in the Ashtekar approach, I'm talking about this approach, basically what they are doing is using the loop quantum cosmology background coupled to the classical Mukhanov-Sasaki equation. The results are still really interesting, which they find, but it would be nice to have some loop quantum gravity correction to this equation. But now the last slide, that it's this large J limit. So what is this large J limit and how it can be connected with the, why is important to connect quantum reduced loop gravity with the full theory? First of all, the space that which we have found is defined neglecting order which scales like 1 over J, okay? Otherwise, our space is not valid. So this already tells us that the best thing that quantum reduced loop gravity can be is the full theory in diagonal gauge when we are neglecting 1 over J correction. But this is the order that we should keep into account to have access to the formally. So it's really the most important order that we have to consider. Why I'm talking about this? Because with the ILCAS approach to study the how the full theory operator acted in this reduced space, he finds something really interesting. Because somehow he was able to write the full operator like a J expansion on these reduced states. Here until now, he just calculate the leading order and he calculate how the next to the leading order are scaling, okay? But what does it mean this when we look at the volume? When we look at the volume, we see that the next to the leading order, which we have to neglect, if we want the volume operator to have this four, it's not 1 over J, but it's square root of J, so it's much bigger than the defining one of the Hilbert space. But what does it mean, this means that basically the leading order of this volume operator, like I said, is the classical volume of something that is connected to a cube. But if I'm going to the next to the leading order, this should be the first quantum correction to this volume. So what does it mean, this? At the this means that basically when we are considering the action of the full theory operator on our reduced states, these reduced states are still quantum states. So this was pretty unexpected that on quantum states, when you are in the Emanuele approach, when you project the operator, you find back exactly the classical expression, because the quantum states, even if we are talking about coherent state, they have a spread and they should have some quantum correction with respect to the classical, in this case, geometry. Okay, in this case, we are happy that we found that the Ashtekar-Lewandowski volume in a certain limit reproduce the classical one, but the fact is that we can continue this expansion because our theory, okay, we can push our theory at least to the order 1 over J, but this, how will change the picture which I present you earlier? In the picture which I present you earlier, the manifold, your initial data surface, was cumulated basically by classical cubes, because as we as seen here, these eigenvalues basically represent the zero order terms of this operator that is exactly the classical discretized one. But these next to the leading order, in this case, are computable. If we are including this next to the leading order, of course, we have to try to include all the next to the leading order, because then there can be, in the dynamics, there can be a coupling of all these quantities, and only after we evaluate this this coupling, we know really of what order our of whatever we can neglect. But at least the vision slightly changed, even if we think only about the kinematics, the vision slightly changed, because in this way we were cubulating the manifold not only with classical cubes, but with classical cubes and some fluctuation. This should be the first order of quantum fluctuation. So what we can think to build? We can think to build a partial quantum gravity thermometer which tells us how much quantum gravity there is in my theory. This thermometer is built by thinking just at the homogeneous coherent sector where we can have a physical intuition between this about this sector. So what it seems here, it seems that in this limit, okay, when we are putting the operator in the Hamiltonian, these operators basically are the classical one, because somehow we are neglecting the leading order term and we are just taking the zero order term that we expect somehow that should be somehow classical, but classical in a discretized version. But then there are the states, of course. There are the coherent states that were studied in this approach. And even the coherent states as a spread. So even if the geometry from which you start is classical, if you are able to compute this spread, you have to find some quantum correction. But in this large J limit, okay, even the fluctuation induced by the states are killed completely. Because you can understand this in this way. When they were considering the expectation value on the states, on the, let's say, the cosmological coherent states picked on a homogeneous and isotropic metric, basically, to do that calculation, okay, first they were putting the operators, the leading order of all these operators. Then this leading order should be calculated with the weight of the states that in the Emanuele's case were Gaussian. They were Gaussian, so they have a spread. But in this large J limit, so when J is much bigger than square root of J, all the next to the leading order of this spread were killed. Indeed, what they found back, they found the dynamics of loop quantum cosmology. But this, what does it mean? That this domain of quantum gravity, these are just indication. It's not that I'm claiming that I have some proof or something, or some indication that in the large J limit, when J is much bigger to square root of J, the domain that we are exploring is the one of discretized classical general relativity. And what is the dynamics who Emanuele obtained is exactly the dynamics of loop quantum cosmology. But somehow what you can expect from a mini superspace model, in loop quantum cosmology, all the fundamental structure of the full theory are not present basically. And somehow when you impose your regularization scheme, for example, the mu bar, and you put even this scheme in the operator in loop quantum cosmology, basically you will find up to some constant factor that the volume is exactly the one found at the leading order with the Hashteker-Lewandowski volume acted on the reduced space. The geometric operator became the same. So in some sense, what I won't say that the model that we have explored until now, they are talking to us about a regime where we can study classical discretized general relativity. But what I want to say is that here there is chance that our operator, which we will put in the Hamiltonian, they can have even some next to the leading order term, that they will be a departure from the classical one. This is why it seems that on this reduced Hilbert space, we can write somehow a sort of expansion in J of the operator of the full theory. And this will give us a lot of, let's say, first control, because in this way we will know somehow what we are calculating and in which regime we are. Because there is a chance that with quantum reduced loop gravity, we can even explore some intermediate regime. The regime that we will never be able to explore is the regime where J are really, really small, because this is the term we should neglect to have this form of our state space of state. Okay, so what we can hope to study? First, the first regime. This first regime gives us some indication that we are in a regime where we are studying discretized classical GR. However, this is not that I'm saying that is something trivial, because the discretization is completely not trivial, because it's a discretization that is not assumed, but it's your starting theory that is provide you this discretization. So still, this model has a big imprinting, in my opinion, from loop quantum gravity. Quantum effect. If we believe that the way that we recover loop quantum cosmology, it's really a way to recover it from the full theory, probably no, because like I said, we are cutting all the spread, both of the operator and both of the states. So basically, we are doing physics just by picking the zero order dynamics which we can find. But then this poses another issue, because to implement the mu bar scheme, the J that in loop quantum cosmology they impose is J equal to 1/2. This choice has been done to have this bare coarse grain homogeneity. But if loop quantum cosmology is living in this regime, J equal to 1/2 is something that really we cannot impose. But this is really a problem. In my opinion, it is not, because J equal to 1/2 is going to tell you who is the fundamental cell of your graph. So who is the smallest chunk of space which you can consider in your dynamics? And loop quantum gravity tells to us that is the one that is associated to the J equal to 1/2. But what does it mean, this? This indicates that the area gap, that is the, in this case, we can really intend it as the smallest area which is present in our states, which our states can describe, can be viewed like a parameter. Because if we are in this regime, the J that we can fix for the area gap should be much bigger than 1/2. It should be a J that is much bigger than square root of J. But this position, in my opinion, no, because the point is how we don't have access experimentally to this fundamental cell. So really, we don't know what is the fundamental cell of the universe that is adding with the dynamics. In this sense, basically, what I want to say is that it seems that quantum gravity effect are connected to how big is this fundamental cell. If the fundamental cell is of the order much bigger than this one, then a complete description of our universe can be done just using this sector of quantum gravity. But if it's smaller, then you have to try to keep into account even this lower order, which, like we have an intuition here from the volume, are not giving us a classical discretization, because some correction to the classical volume started to appear. So we have this free regime, and there is a chance that with quantum reduced loop gravity, we will be able to explore this regime, but not this one. Because if we want to explore the regime, that is the regime where full quantum gravity effect should appear, we need basically to find different solution of our Gupta-Bloyer condition, and even a space of states that in principle is completely different with respect to the one that we have found. And that's all. Thank you very much for your attention.
All right, thank you very much, Joelle. Okay, so let's see if we have other questions. Okay, well, I mean, we had that. So have you looked into the for the black hole case, like how much more difficult to study the quantum dynamics if you want to look at the black hole case compared to the cosmology, for instance?
I don't understand, Daniele. I didn't hear you very well because
I was wondering. So it seems like you're saying that you can investigate the quantum dynamics for the cosmological sector.
Yeah.
Now I was wondering, for instance, how more difficult it is to look at that in the context of black holes, for instance.
Okay. So in the context of black hole, first of all, it should be verified that if this ILCA approach is still working, but from we talk about this and it seems that there is a good chance. Then the problem is to see how this correction of the operator are, because if you are adding then a different operator, you will have a different dynamics. And in the case of the black hole, I don't know how much is difficult already the dynamic which you are dealing with. This is the point. But in principle, if this expansion is still valid, and it should be, because the difference that you have in the black hole is that you are considering even state with J minus J or minus JJ, right?
Yeah.
Because on this state, basically the story is the same. So yes, if in this state, the work of ILCA will be still valid. So in principle, then it's just a matter of how difficult will be the computations.
Okay. And so you investigated the graph changing Hamiltonian and the quantum.
No. This is something that we have still to do. This is something that we have still to do. And here we don't know even if in this framework it would be possible to address this problem. This is something really that I cannot answer.
And at the level of the algebra, have you looked at anything about that? Or?
Now, basically what we have done is just to redefine this whole framework. Now we want first to define the Hamiltonian, and then the next step we should look at all these things like the algebra, the graph changing Hamiltonian, and these things. But are of course things that should be really important to investigate.
Okay. Okay. So let's thank Joelle and. And then we'll see you tomorrow for Simone's talk. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you to everybody again.